I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome to Fronteras, a show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Immigrant rights activists in San Diego joined a chorus of voices nationwide to protest Congress's inaction in coming up with a solution to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Matt Hoffman of KPBS reports from a protest that took place just before last week's government shutdown.
Here outside the City Heights Performance Annex, people are voicing their support for a permanent solution that would allow for hundreds of thousands of young immigrants to legally stay in the United States.
Friday's rally featured personal stories from dreamers like Ali Torabi, who moved to the United States in 1995 from Iran before enrolling in DACA. He says it's given him opportunities he could have never imagined.
But the second I received DACA, I put in my application, I got accepted into a lot of universities, and I ended up going to my dream school at UCLA, and that's all because of DACA. If it wasn't for that, I don't know where I'd be, maybe still in the shadows washing dishes.
The City Heights rally was organized by the Rise Club at Mesa College, part of the undocumented rights advocacy group United We Dream. People at the rally called for a Clean Dream Act, where thousands of young immigrants would be able to secure permanent status in the United States.
To this day, when I'm driving, I still can't believe that I'm driving. Because we tend to appreciate the things that were stripped of us, that were hoarded from us for so long. And I think of all these younger kids that will never have that.
Matt Hoffman, KPBS News.
Later in the show, a dreamer's letter to President Trump. A San Antonio charter school is in year three of a five-year experiment. Can the charter school's method of helping low-income students of color earn college degrees be replicated by a much larger district? Texas Public Radio's Camille Phillips reports on a partnership that's showing early signs of success, but it's unclear whether the program will last once the funding dries up.
Make sure you write it exactly as it's shown. So Texas A&M, let's back up.
At Kipps High School in downtown San Antonio, juniors and seniors have a class dedicated to college. Every week, a counselor helps them research schools, fill out applications, and apply for scholarships. Senior Jacqueline Hernandez has applied to more than a dozen schools.
Like one step more to your future. So like you have to really put the effort into what the stuff you're doing right now.
Once a student is in college, KIPP staff members like Roy Feliciano visit them on campus to ask them how they're doing.
To the point of how many hours are you sleeping? Do you know your GPA? Have you looked at your degree plan because you say you want to have this major? Are you struggling in this major? And are there other options?
The support is intense because KIPP wants all of their students to beat the odds. Nationwide, less than 15% of people from low-income families earn college degrees by the time they're 26. And according to KIPP, that support is working. The national charter school system says about 50% of its alumni, most of whom come from low-income families, earn college degrees. Ruben Rodriguez is in charge of the college counseling program at KIPP San Antonio.
We're not happy with 50%, right? But it's a lot better than what would happen if we weren't involved.
But the extra support also comes at an extra cost. KIPP San Antonio's college counseling department is funded through a 2015 grant from Valero Energy. KIPP pitched the five-year, $3 million grant to Valero as a way to not only support the charter school, but also launch a similar college program at San Antonio ISD. In 2016, KIPP embedded a college counselor at SAISD's Jefferson High School. After a year, the number of Jefferson graduates accepted into four-year universities doubled from 26% to 53%. That inspired Valero Energy to write an $8.4 million check to SAISD to expand the program. The district used the grant to hire 18 college counselors before the 2017-2018 school year. At Jefferson High School, for example, students can now get college help from two counselors and financial aid advisor Nancy York.
One person, as you can see, if you were the only one in here, you'd be running from student to student.
SAISD wants most of its graduates to go into college by 2020. Victoria Bustos, the district's student support director, says the extra staff will help achieve that goal. But she's not sure how they'll be able to pay for the counselors once the grant ends in 2022.
This is a question I wake up thinking about every day. How are we building the system?
Because it's a five-year grant and we've got to keep going after
Because it's a five-year grant and we want to sustain our programs.
Education policy professor Haria Jabbar of the University of Texas at Austin says that's a valid concern. She says these days most foundations like to support new projects that promise a big impact.
And then if it's proven successful, the district or the state will opt to continue it and find funds to do that. Again, though, I think with given how limited and tight school budgets are, I don't know if that's possible.
Valero CEO Joe Gorder says if the program is successful, money will follow.
It's not our intention to create something that dies. But I'm also not willing today to say that we're going to fund $8.4 million every year for into perpetuity.
By the district's definition of success, there's a long ways to go and not much time. San Antonio ISD wants to have 80% of its graduates go to college by 2020. Just 54% of the class of 2017 enrolled in college this fall. Camille Phillips, Texas Public Radio News.
One Dallas high school is home to many low-income and refugee students, many of whom financially support their families. Conrad High School is devoted to providing students with a first-hand experience of dealing with budgets, saving, and investing. KERA's Courtney Collins spent an afternoon with students in the school's finance program as they find out the value of their dollars.
Students in the Finance Academy at Conrad High School take classes like accounting and securities. They watch a stock ticker scroll in real time, and they're fast-tracked for paid internships at local corporations. On this particular afternoon, students, not teachers, are planning off-site visits to local companies like Dave & Buster's and Men's Warehouse. They have to figure out what time they can leave campus, when they can squeeze in lunch, and how they're going to travel.
And if y'all want Uber, it's $8 to $9.
They're considering the train, the bus, Uber, one of those bike shares, even hoofing it.
33 minutes with Speedy Gonzalez walk, though.
Conrad senior Brenda Martinez takes charge at the front of the class, plotting out potential routes and calculating costs on the whiteboard. She plans to study business in college. Her family is low income, and she hopes studying finance at Conrad might put her on a different track.
My mom and my dad, they divorced, so basically I live with my mom, and she's a mother of four that just provides for all four of us, basically. We only ask for my dad's money, like, if we really need it.
Her paid internship over the summer at Capital One meant she could pitch in with family expenses. More importantly, what Martinez has learned at Conrad has helped her educate her loved ones.
Basically, when my mom, she tells me to, like, oh, can you help me out with this, like, with the bills? I really don't understand it. Here we go over it, like, oh, what does this mean? When a bank sends you this, what can the debit card do? What can the credit card do?
That's the whole idea behind the Finance Academy. Help students understand stocks and insurance, cultivate an interest in business and entrepreneurship, and teach real financial literacy.
The earlier we can get them involved with understanding how their work works with their money, etc., maybe we could increase our overall national average of people saving and budgeting.
Janelle Humphreys runs the Academy of Business and Finance at Conrad. She says at this school, more than 50 different languages are spoken due to a large population of refugee students. So building financial literacy skills sometimes means starting at the very beginning.
When you talk about concepts and operations of money, that is, you know, zero for a good population of our students when they first join us.
That means teaching some kids to recognize currency and make change, which is why Humphreys lobbied hard to get two ATMs installed inside the school.
In having the strongest relationship with your money, sometimes you just need to see it.
The next step is opening a functioning bank on campus, a satellite branch of an existing financial institution. Conrad already has the space cleared out. There's seating, teller windows, even a boardroom. A few years ago, it was a pretend bank that circulated what they called Conrad cash. You could trade it for snacks, a good spot in the cafeteria line, or extra credit. Humphreys says that was a good start. But these students have jobs and pay bills. They need the real thing.
There's a good chunk of students here that might be head of or co-head of household. So once they do finally figure out, you know, how they're bringing in money, now there's a whole issue of budgeting, et cetera. And that's what we're missing for students in this area. We have a lot of students that help support their family.
Christopher Linez is one of them.
Yeah, money's really tight. My mom works at a factory, and my dad doesn't because he's disabled. My mom is the only one that brings, you know, really like a flow of income in.
Which is why Linez is looking for work. He's already had two paid internships through the Finance Academy and loves having money in the bank. He's not a spender.
I'm keeping my money. I'm saving it. And through the two internships, I've earned like $3,600, and I budgeted that, and I still have over $1,000 now. Anytime mom needs money, I'm like, hey, sure, I'll pay it.
For the most part, these students don't get a weekly allowance, and they're not spending the money they do have on nights out with their friends. They're helping make life easier for their families, and hopefully forming habits that will brighten their futures too. Courtney Collins, KERA News.
Coming up next on Fronteras, a nurse who's a DACA recipient writes a letter to President Trump.
My patients do not care what documentation I have as I hold their hand and cry with them after that terminal diagnosis.
We'll explore that story and hear about the push for more Hispanic nurses when we come back. I'm Norma Martinez. Welcome back to Fronteras. Over 3 million registered nurses practice in the U.S. Of those, only 7% are Hispanic. Hispanics make up 17% of the population of the U.S. This disparity has highlighted the need to recruit nurses of color into nursing schools. A five-year, $1.5 million National Institutes of Health grant is making it possible to reach out through media resources to teachers and students in high school and college. Angie Millan is a registered nurse in Los Angeles County. She serves as nursing director at Children's Medical Services. Millan is a board member with the National Association of Hispanic Nurses, NAHN, which is taking the lead in the outreach efforts.
One of our main things that we do is try to recruit and retain Hispanics into the field of nursing and help them grow professionally, mentor them, provide scholarships for them. And in addition to that, we provide education to our communities, because through the interviews that I've done with the youth, Hispanic youth, what I've been finding out is that many parents of Hispanic youth still don't realize that a registered nurse is a career, a well-paid career. As the communities, Hispanics continue to grow, I think I understand we're about 17%. We still don't represent.
Why do you think that is?
One of the reasons is because our youth are not educated on that there's additional careers out there to prepare yourself early in school, you know, starting in middle school, high school. We're trying to educate them to make sure that they're taking science and math. And they struggle with that because they didn't, you know, take from, you know, the regular algebra, so forth, all the different levels of math. Sometimes we find that their English skills they're not confident in those areas as well. You know, maybe they're not, their writing skills. We need to prepare them better. And when we speak to the youth, what they're telling us is that nobody's guiding them. Maybe nobody in their family have attended college in the past. Maybe they're the first ones that are going to college. They feel lost. They say that when they start, for example, nursing school, they say everybody around them gets it. And it's almost like they feel like maybe they miss something, that maybe the other students, they're talking about the white students, the Asian students, somehow they got the information that they never received. So they always feel like they're trying to catch up. So what we did with this grant, in addition to putting out a campaign and interviewing Hispanic youth that are currently in nursing school to ask them, what are the barriers that you're facing in nursing school? How did you solve them? You know, so tell other youth that hopefully we can entice to get interested in the field of nursing. We're also developed a mentor database. So once we get these youth interested, we're pairing them up with a non-member who is already a registered nurse, or it could be somebody who just recently graduated, because they can help this youth and they guide them. What are the prerequisites? What are the classes you need? This is how I did it. Yes, you're going to face this, you know, and so forth and so on. So we just started the database. So we have our mentors ready to go. We're always invited to attend like career day and so forth in our communities, wherever we live. So out of this, I developed a PowerPoint presentation on why be a nurse, so that all of the members were all saying the same thing to the youth. This is how you start. This is the prerequisites you need. And if you're interested, we're going to now connect you with the mentor so that they can help you along the way.
Do you find that sometimes in the Hispanic community there might be some of those old standing cultural barriers?
Yes.
You know, that
the reason we want to get to the parents is because we want them to support the youth because they don't understand. They say that so much studying that they might as well be a doctor then, you know, because they're always with their books. And the other thing is that, for example, in Mexico, when you're a nurse in Mexico, you're not a well-paid, it's not a well-paid profession. It's seen as somebody who's, you know, picking up bedpans and maybe giving bed baths. And here, that's not what a registered nurse is. A registered nurse is somebody who actually does head-to-toe assessments, and they're the ones that give the medication, take orders from the doctors, and they're at the bedside 24/7. They know about the patient. They know when something's going right, when it's going wrong. And that's why it's so much studying, so much education. And that's where we're trying to educate the parents. It's, you know, a registered nurse is a career. As a registered nurse, you can support yourself. You could afford to buy a house. You could afford to buy a car. It's that well paid, especially if they continue their education and not stop just at a registered nurse. We have a bachelor's level. We have a master's degree. And then the terminal degree is your doctorate or your PhD.
So you obviously are a nurse and you are a Latina. Tell us your story. I mean, did you feel a sense of isolation when you first started studying?
Yes. I went to school a long time ago in 1986, and I actually was working for LA County, and LA County had a LA County Diploma School of Nursing. So I used to work, and in the evenings, I used to go take my prerequisites at the community college, and it took me 3 years. Then I got into nursing school. It was a two-year for a diploma. You don't get a degree. You can count us how many Hispanics were there. There are very, very few. But I feel that I have been very lucky to have good teachers that cared about me, that took their time. And like I said, we kind of stuck together. I still didn't know about non. And another 3 years, I got my bachelor's. I went back another 3 years and got my master's. And just most recently in 2015, I completed the doctorate degree. But yeah, you're by yourself. You depend on a lot on the friends that you make there, and you, because they're the ones that understand you. They understand what we're doing in class. And nobody tells you it's okay. You just need tutoring. You may need a little bit more help on this. Maybe you need to repeat the class so you get it, so you can continue. Because if you don't get the foundation, the basic math and the sciences, you're not going to be able to complete the program, because you need to take those foundations with you in order to continue with your courses.
And going back to the idea of mentorship, I know that how important it is to have that role model to look up to. And as much as we'd like to think of ourselves as a colorblind society, there's really nothing like being able to see somebody who looks and sounds like you to make you think, I can do that too.
Right. And we don't have a lot of Hispanic teachers, I mean, faculty. I think it's growing. There's a push, but we're not there yet. You know, we at NON try to recruit and keep the students that we're interviewing, you know, to kind of keep them there so they can help us reach out to the next generation of youth that are coming. Because the other thing that I'm sure you know, Hispanics are very young. You know, the average age is about 26. So I'm always telling everybody, you know, reach out to those youth, especially if they're out there maybe practicing as a certified nursing attendant, which, you know, that pays, what, $8, $10? No. You know, come back to school. And if that's the type of work you want to do, become a registered nurse. Don't settle for $8, $10 an hour, especially if you love what you're doing.
That was my conversation with Angie Millan, a registered nurse and board member with the National Association of Hispanic Nurses. Jessica Esparza was uprooted from Durango, Mexico in 2005 and joined her father, a farm laborer, in Quincy, Washington, along with her mother and younger sister. In December, Esparza, now a registered nurse, used her Facebook page to share a personal letter with President Trump. The crux of her message? My patients do not care about my accent, my origins, or the color of my skin.
Dear Donald Trump, taking DACA away has been upsetting, frustrating, and heartbreaking, to say the least. But with or without DACA, I will continue to be the best nurse and person that I can be today. My patients do not care what documentation I have as I hold their hand and cry with them after that terminal diagnosis, because my patient's family does not care what color my skin is as I give CPR to their loved one, because my patients do not care about my accent as I educate them about their chronic condition, because my patients do not care about where I'm really from when I'm taking care of them. Before DACA, I was fighting strong to get where I wanted to be. With DACA, I achieved my goals of becoming a registered nurse. 2 years later, I work with an amazing crew and love my job. I could not imagine the future at this moment. All I can say is that no matter what happens, like every dreamer, I'm here to stay and provide for my community.
This audio profile was produced by Enrique Serna of KCTS-TV9 in Seattle. And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Norma Martinez and Jerry Quijano produced this broadcast. Michelle Dubach is our executive producer, and Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.